Hello and welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, December 30th, 2021. This is part two of the two-part space hosted by VGX hero Obi-Wan with C-Fi talking about VGX, Terra, Luna, a bunch of other stuff. Let's take a listen.
Wait, what was what did you say? I missed that.
So what I was saying is on StormX, they're going to have a checking account. So when you can onboard the checking account, and then basically, so there's going to have an integration as KuCoin is going to be a partner. I think Voyager will be a partner as well. So when you basically, you can say, hey, I'm holding however many tens of thousands of tokens, say 31,000 tokens for the silver membership. So then that gets it linked into your StormX app to verify that you get the 1.5x rewards in StormX. So you are you're getting the benefits of the StormX reward by, you know, holding basically your assets in the other wallets.
The reward then would like, so let's say I go and buy, like go get a hotel at hotels.com or something on StormX, and I get my, normally you get the rewards paid out to you in that app. So when you claim it, instead of going to MetaMask though, it's going to go to your Voyager wallet now, or you see what I'm saying? Like, I hate MetaMask, so I don't really want to mess with that, you know, in the middle of all this.
Yeah, so the way that the StormX apps works today, and this is my speculation of how this is going to work. I don't know for sure officially, you know, official announcement, but you pick the wallet that you want to send. There might be a certain limit before they'll send it, because if you accept the rewards with the wallet you have linked to the app, they have a mechanism that they have patented that cuts the gas, so they can do that within like a 3-day range and kind of minimize the gas. But if you choose to go to a wallet that's external to the one you have linked to your StormX account, then it has to hit a certain dollar threshold before they can kind of justify sending it.
Oh, got it. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, that's the reason why, like I posted to Simon or whatever with StormX. I'm like, dude, just like create a StormX primitive on like Terra or whatever and get it over with. Why are we still like paying gas fees for this shit? It doesn't make any sense. Like,
exactly.
For the small user of StormX, they're getting like just raked over the coals with ETH fees. It makes no sense. Like, if you're a whale buying huge amounts of StormX, it made sense. But
if Simon migrated to Terra and he did some kind of integration with Kato, holy shit. Like,
exactly. God. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, you want to be able to spend your stuff. Like, the crazy thing for those of you guys that don't use StormX, what's interesting is, like, so for example, let's say I have a trip I want to take and I want to, like, use Agoba. I think it's called Agoba or Agoda, whatever that's called. It's like a travel agency type of deal. Normally, like, it'll give you like 7% off on there, which is probably very similar to using some other apps like Honey and this and that. But the way StormX works is it doubles your or triples your rewards and such based on like your membership level of how much StormX tokens you have. That can get fairly expensive to get to like the whale level. Like, you could spend like I remember I had like, I don't know, a couple hundred grand worth of StormX tokens or something. And you could get crazy with it and get the benefit, but then it starts feeling like when you get to the highest level, it starts feeling like some kind of a timeshare. Cause you're like, wait a minute, I'm like, what's the opportunity cost of that much money sitting here versus something else? And you get into that. Right. But here's the thing. So let's say you get like, with those levels, you get like, I think it was 24% off of travel on Agoba for your hotels and shit, right? So right. You get that 24%, but that's that's returned to you after the transaction with that travel agency. So in other words, your cost basis for what you've spent there has actually been like, it's the original cost of your trip, but the payback comes in StormX. So then, like, your in other words, the discount's not taken and then you're charged to your debit card, right? So your debit card Now, let's say I was using my Coinbase debit card and getting 4% off back there. I was getting that cashback reward also. And then let's say, for example, I was taking a work trip and I was going to like get reimbursed for my work anyway. Like now I'm like pocketing the StormX rewards and I'm pocketing my debit card rewards. And
which, then I submit my rebates, by the
I
way.
I submit my receipt for the trip I took, right? And yeah. Like they're submitting that back to me. And the funny thing is any other things you got, like for example, in like, let's say you got like some of these travel agencies give you like some like points and shit in there. So like, mm-hmm. you know, after like 6 days of hotels, you know, how you get the seventh day free. You're getting that shit too. So mm-hmm. you're basically traveling like with the combination of StormX, a half decent crypto debit card, and like some of these programs. And then now if you have USDC, for example, on Voyager and you're making that yield too, you know, just imagine that over a period of a year. So you're actually coming out on a trip and I was like spending like maybe maybe it was like 40% off all things said and done, something like that, something ridiculous. And it was really quite amazing. Like you could do a lot of traveling for that money if you come.
It's not only that, but your crypto card and your StormX rewards are rebates. So it's crypto that's not taxable income.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And by the way, like your StormX was getting, I was getting like at the beginning like 20% APY, and now it's like 10%. And then your VGX that you're getting back is going to be earning 7% APY. And then on right. top of that, the USDC that's sitting there on its ass is earning 9% or 10% APY.
Right.
Your level is.
Hey Obi, can you please say what you just said about the tax free?
Yeah. So when you use a crypto debit card and you're spending on a good, and then that good gets reimbursed through the credit card rewards, it's a rebate. It's like a shopping rebate, and there's no W-2 or, you know, any kind of
exactly.
1099 that gets filed for that. It's like a shopping rebate. Like remember in the old days, you buy something at Circuit City or Best Buy, like you buy a printer and you get a rebate for the ink.
Exactly.
Well, you're not getting taxed for the ink.
But here's a question for you. Like, for example, I just bought something from Finish Line, right? And I get $13 back. So let's say I get $13 back. Well, that's in Storm tokens, right? So later, if I go and sell those tokens, then I'm hoping that they're going to appreciate. Isn't that going to be taxable?
Yeah, that would be a capital gains because you're selling an asset that's appreciated in value from when you received it. You're just not having to claim income from when you receive a rebate.
Got
although,
it.
Although realistically, like at the end of the day, like the CSV files with all this data, it's going to be hard to like parse what is and what isn't income. So
exactly.
At the end of the day, you probably would end up paying tax on unless you're going to literally go line by line and like select all that shit. But at the end of the day, who cares when you're making like 30% off your trip or whatever? Like, you know, like it's just basically free magic internet money anyway at that point. Don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, I've literally saved like half
USDC.
What, Baroness?
Another thing would be you're instead of selling it for a capital gain, you can end up exchanging or swapping that out for USDC, which is another loophole.
Huh. Oh, you mean, swap it out and then like let that earn interest instead.
Yeah.
Well, if you swap something for USDC that you never had a cost basis on, would that be a little, I guess, I don't know. I guess
there's no like precedent for all this shit. So
there is no, I'm wondering, I'm just kind of thinking that in my head.
It's like whatever the hell you're comfortable telling the auditor when they audit you.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my opinion, so StormX is the home of the quadruple rewards, right? You get rewards for using the card, you get rewards for using the platform, you get staking rewards, right? And then you get, you know, double the cash back depending or whatever your loyalty member is, right? So you can stack four different types of rewards. And the only thing that really is taxable is the staking, the 10% staking. Everything else you shouldn't have to claim.
Yeah. And the only downside in my view to adoption was that like StormX on Voyager was like not liquid staked. You couldn't just earn the yield on it and you had to move it to MetaMask. And that was like the mm-hmm. ETH fees were lame and that kind of thing bothered me. And I could see how like someone who was like a normal user would be turned off by those fees up front. They don't make any sense.
Well, I just did that recently because I just leveled up to gold and it only cost $29 to stake it.
Okay, so it wasn't too hideous, but it's still weird though. If you're on Terra, you're like spending 3 cents. It starts getting weird.
Yeah, it does feel. Once you get used to using Terra or Elrond or something superior, it's hard to go to inferior solutions.
Yeah, especially when you're sitting here trying to like save money on like your freaking groceries and stuff, and now you're paying like a $30 ETH fee. It's just weird.
Yeah, something kind of interesting. If you're on MetaMask and you're staking Storm tokens, I don't know if any of you have noticed, but you know, you take the tokens, you know, let's say on Sunday when they distribute them, it shows you the value that you're taking it at that time. But now let's say later you go back and you look at the transaction, it actually shows you the value at the current day. And they're all the same because, you know, you're not compounding your tokens unless you pay, you know, gas fees to do so. So I find it interesting that that's like a taxable nightmare.
Yeah, like, you know, all of those nuances of the staking and the compounding and everything are a little bit annoying. So like the nice thing on Voyager would be like if it was liquid staked, essentially it's auto compounding just by being there versus you having to keep restaking, right? That's a big pain in the ass. That's what I didn't like about that MetaMask experience and that whole way that staking worked.
I agree 100%, but the thing is you know, and I love Voyager, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's 2% compounding with staking there.
Right. And I think they just sort of offered something so that people that like were using StormX on there who didn't use MetaMask and the whole StormX platform, like they just speculated on StormX. It was sort of like a little extra boosty for them, but it wasn't meant to sort of like replace like traditionally staking StormX or whatever. Cause it like in the like last year, like, or the beginning of this year, like January or so, like there, like it was one of the common ways that a lot of people got from, like they had transfer functions at the very beginning, and it was one of the most common ways for people to get onto the StormX platform was Voyager, right? That's how that a lot of people that were interested in that got to Voyager as a that's how they got onto it. And because it wasn't available very much else, other locations. And even to this day, I don't think it's really available that easily elsewhere unless you go on like Uniswap or something. Which a lot of normies don't like go on Uniswap, right? So it was like Voyager was kind of an entry point for this for quite some time. But I think it's like when you add this combo of like, if you add the cashback rewards from Voyager's debit card, the yield off your USDC, StormX, like the value proposition gets better because now you're like liquid staking. You don't have to do all the fees and other shenanigans. You can easily speculate on the price of StormX also, by the way, because you can buy and sell at a will because liquid staked, right? So like if you want to ride it up a little bit and like try to like trade it, you could without, you know, messing with your ability to use it for your rewards, which is even better. Like, so all of that combined, I think you'd have a lot more people using it. And then it's like auto staked when it's on there. So it's auto compounding too on top of your VGX that you're getting for like your debit card swipes. On top of the USDC that's compounding automatically, it becomes very powerful as a trio.
So how are the credit card companies and airline mileage programs and such going to compete with this type of amazingness once everybody starts spreading the word? Yeah, imagine the StormX and the VGX adoption.
I think there's good sense of like airline companies building their frequent flyer miles systems like on Terra or something like that, honestly. You could probably build a much more efficient frequent flyer mile system on crypto, just generally speaking.
I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see partnerships.
Yeah, but the problem with, okay, there's the hidden truth behind those programs is the way that the airlines are paid from the credit card makers is how they make a ton of their revenue. Almost to the point to where they don't even care what their profit is on the flight. I can post a really awesome video that explains this, but essentially the rewards programs for the airlines are more valuable than the actual airlines themselves.
It would be nice if you did that on Luna and how you do the loans and go back and, you know, you're getting VGX and you're getting Luna. I find that interesting, but I can't seem to grasp it.
Oh yeah, sure. So the loop in terms of how do you extra compound your VGX? So if you use, oh, by the way, the StormX card is going to also give you more StormX or boost or discount off if you use the StormX debit card to shop on their app. So that's another thing to keep in mind if you want to keep stacking rewards without, you know, paying taxes for them.
I said this before, OB, between you and CeFi, extreme couponing is like extreme cryptoing. Like, we need a TLC show around this. Like, you guys could be like a whole episode. Like, you guys
I became a billionaire by shopping at Walmart, you know?
Right. You know those people that like have $0 in the cash out? Like, that's what's going through my head. Like, you guys are just like figuring this all out.
Maybe CeFi and I can host an infomercial about, you know, how you can save and sign up for these programs now.
You know what I find is really interesting, by the way, that you say that, like, the number of people who are in crypto to sort of like just like play the volatility and get rich quick is fairly high. But the number of people that actually, like, if you look at StormX's subscriber growth, for example, I would have thought it would have been much faster than what it is for considering how decent the actual rewards are.
Yeah, that people don't understand it.
Yeah, maybe it was because of the like friction to get onboarded onto it. Probably was the biggest like detriment, maybe. You know, you had to go through a lot of steps and like learn about, but you learned a lot doing it though. You learned about yields, you learn about MetaMask and how like a little bit of how DeFi works and this and that. So it was quite the experience, but like you don't actually you don't really like, it's really tough to use it right now. And I think that's what has prevented like a lot more people from jumping on board, in my view. Don't you think? Like,
yeah, I think the lack of liquidity holds the STMX token back because it's really hard to find. I mean, it's basically KuCoin and Voyager. And that, I think if it hit Coinbase, I think that'd make a huge difference to the price. And then, you know, it's just awareness. Like, I showed my wife the app and I'm like, we make sure you check this before we buy anything on any website ever. Like, and she loves the app. And I'm sure that that'll spread like wildfire to all the friends. And they're like, oh, what's the StormX thing? And how do I get this booster? I think once the membership tier and the debit card and the savings, especially the 8% back on Amazon with your StormX card, I mean, shoot, that's a huge draw to people that are already getting the deal.
Because the Amazon credit card normally gives you 5% cash back. So 8% is substantial, no doubt.
Right. Yeah. So it depends on your StormX membership tier, but it's like, I think 6 to 8%.
How do you get Amazon? If you put in shopping and you type in Amazon, it doesn't show up.
No, it's using the debit card. So StormX has like 15,000 merchants they partner with, but for everyone that they don't partner with, like, you can still use the StormX card and get cash back. But they have a special Amazon partnership for just using the card, not using the StormX app.
Yeah. So the way this works is like the Visa debit card network has a bunch of sort of partnerships pre-built into it, and you can sort of like get access to that by using their card. So there's some, I don't know, some scheme goes on with there. And so that's what they've been working on getting. And that's the same thing everybody's been having problem with, is getting debit cards, because like the Visa and MasterCard people are so busy with these demands and so many platforms building on these debit cards. But yeah, StormX, some of their rewards come directly from the use of the debit card, which is really interesting.
Yeah, so going back to the question of the loop, how do you loop it? So if you've got a StormX debit card or you got a VGX debit card, and you know that you're going to get rewarded in some way for the transactions that you use, what you do is you go to KuCoin or crypto.com and you buy crypto with your card. So that generates, you know, VGX or StormX type rewards. And then you buy Luna, and then you bond it to Anchor Protocol and take a loan. And then you can send those funds back to the exchange and then buy VGX or, you know, whatever other token if you're not just going to continually loop Luna. So say you wanted to buy Avalanche, or you wanted to buy, you know, Kadena, or you wanted to buy, you know, more VGX. You just do that loop. You use your card to the exchange. You buy what you want. You put your Luna up on Anchor, you take a loan, back and forth. The only thing you have to be careful in this scenario is that when you're doing so, you're less liquid, so you have to be careful about your loan to value ratio, and have dry powder on the side or extra Luna that you can, you know, add as collateral to improve your LTV. But that's the magic loop.
Almost how I got all my credit card points. It used to be able to buy gold, bring it to the bank, pay off your credit card, buy gold again, move it to the bank, go to the credit card, and just do a loop.
Yep.
That's hilarious. So on KuCoin, I didn't notice this, but so you can use a debit card to buy stuff there?
Yeah. So if you go to the mobile app, I don't know where it is on the website because I only use the mobile app. There's right on the homepage, there's a buy crypto button with Visa and MasterCard now supported. And you can literally.
Oh, yeah. No shit. Look at that.
Yeah.
So is there like an extraordinary like fee for this, or what's the deal when you buy, buy a debit?
No. Yeah, no, it's very reasonable. It's like, what is it, like 2-4%, kind of like the same as Crow.
Okay, so like it said, okay, here it is. I want to spend like 10,000 USD. I will receive 9,627 USDT. So they charge you a pretty good amount for the process.
That's true.
So, fast trade, P2P, and third party. Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the credit card processors and exchange have to make something off of it.
Right, right.
But I mean, it is a way, like if you're impatient or if you're not technologically advanced enough to, you know, do a withdrawal from Voyager, go to this exchange, change this thing, send it to Terra Station, do the whole.
Oh, but you're pocketing. So the way you're describing, so what happens here is you're paying 2% for the fee here, but you're getting 3% cashback reward theoretically on Voyager if you're a navigator. So you can pocket the 1% for free.
Right. So you get a 1% arbitrage on an appreciating asset. Plus you send the superior asset to Anchor Protocol, get your loan. Then you've got UST back, which you can then, you know, ship around and buy whatever you want.
That's pretty cool. So, yeah, if you do it in a large enough scale, actually, the ARB makes quite a lot of money, if you think about it. So, we'll have to figure out how to make this work.
I'm sure you can really take advantage of it. I may not.
We'll figure this out. We need to like mooch this for what it's worth.
It'd make a fun post.
Yeah, really.
C-Fi, your laugh, bro. You're like a kid in the candy store. You're like, I got this shit.
You got to make money fun, right?
Exactly. But but these are the kind of tricks that these are the kind of things that your friends want to know about, right? Like, oh, how do I get, you know, it's like coupon clipping on steroids, but it actually adds, these things add up to a lot over time. Like if you think about what we just described with StormX, VGX, USDC yield and whatever, just that alone could probably like double the number of vacations you could take over a period of a couple of years.
That's something that I wanted Obi to talk about too, is like between those three things, and this is something that you've talked about in the past, Obi, is what you use them for specifically and how they all tie together, and pretty much, you know, you can run your whole life off of it.
Yeah, basically. So I treat VGX, obviously I use VGX as my centralized banking solution. It'll be basically where I do, you know, checking and stocks and crypto buys from a centralized place, you know, especially when Luna is transferable. But I also treat it like a rental property. So instead of buying an asset like a home that's impaired, eventually I'm going to be able to borrow off my VGX. So I just keep putting money into that house, upgrading the house. So the more my VGX I take off the market, the less supply there is, which should make the price of my house go up. And then I collect my 7% stake in rewards, which is like collecting rent. And I don't have to worry about property tax increases or, tenant issues or, toilets breaking or utilities that I might have to cover, you know, all that kind of stuff is, you know, headache free. And it's extremely liquid. So I could sell it and take the cash at any point in time. So that's the use case for that. StormX is the thing I buy for if I have to spend my money, and then I want to get something back from it in the most tax advantaged way possible. And especially, you know, what I want to do with my time is I want to travel, like what CFI was just saying. I want to be able to maximize the discounts on my travel and get a return back. And, you know, everyday needs and shopping, I want those rewards. So StormX is my, if I got to spend money, this is what I'm going to use to spend money.
And then these sorts of things become even more relevant, like in a stagflation economy where your income's not rising, but the cost of shit that you're buying is.
Precisely. Or so
you almost have to do these things just to sort of like combat inflation to some extent.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is kind of an inflation battle or new strategy. And then into Luna and Terra specifically, well, that's my short-term lending slash, wealth generation, degen, do whatever protocol, right? I mean, I can shop on it. I can save on it. I can buy synthetic stocks on it. Basically, the world is your oyster and there's tons more stuff coming. And then eGold is like my future tech, similar to eGold, to Luna, a lot of the same development real world usage will hit that chain. And they're just a little bit behind where Terra Luna is right now. But I really love the deflationary tokenomics. Once it's inflationary right now early, but once the network traffic picks up, that token in itself, stops emitting, it caps out somewhere in the low 20 million. So you got a tokenomics that are essentially like Bitcoin, but you get to collect staking rewards, which are basically the transaction fees on the network. And the fees are low enough in the native asset that it's not a burden. So I absolutely love that one. Those are my top four right there.
I've been in and out of EGLD like trading before, and I've sort of made some bucks here and there on that, but. So from the perspective of just the long hold, like what's the thesis there? What kind of time frame would you be talking about holding that? And like what would be your estimation in terms of like where you see the growth creating the type of tokenomic situation where it's a more parabolic sort of like movement at that point?
Yeah, so you're kind of at the point right now with eGold where it's kind of like buying Bitcoin in 2010. It's in the 200s and the supply is going to be very similar. So say we get to the end of the decade in 10 years and kind of a long scenario here, let's say 10 to 15 years. Let's say eGold is at worst case scenario, 1% of the market share, which I think is completely doable. So, that's effectively what the market share of Bitcoin was at the high of the market now. So you're looking at a token that's worth, 40 to 50 grand in a 10-year horizon. Pretty good, especially if you can gobble up a bunch now. And if you can get, 180 eGold, I mean, that's an eGold every other week. That's a pretty good payday in the future, right? If you choose to stake it all. So it's pretty awesome. They've got over a million accounts now on the Myer exchange. You can get 14% staking. Or you can go to Myer.exchange, and I'm telling you, the tokenomics of this Myer exchange and the use case and what's coming is second to none. Like it beats Astroport in my opinion. So it's an amazing. If you want to go single sided staking or get airdrops from staking your tokens that give you like a 15x lockup, I mean you're getting triple figure yields on something. You'll be able to leverage for synthetic trading or for lending. So yeah, super bullish.
But Obi, I want to make money now. I don't want to wait 10 years.
Yeah, if you can be patient like a year or two and you utilize the Myer exchange and you start stacking eGold, you will do very well as that network grows in popularity and people discover it. It's adaptive state sharding technology. Yeah, proof of stake. It's one of a kind. They wrote it from line zero, and it's a carbon negative blockchain. Like it's super ESG compliant. It's governments and businesses are going to absolutely love it. It's got business class, you know, Explorer and Partners. If you go to LRound Partners, you can see all the stuff coming, plus all the providers. It's got 3,200 nodes. So it's, the network is all decentralized. It's never had a second of downtime. It can scale to more transactions per second than freaking Visa. They have the best wallet in the business with Mire wallet. They have members of the Brave team that have created a Mire browser. I mean, what do you want to know? I can go deep on this one.
So it's getting to that, like you think it's getting to the sort of critical mass stage or whatever?
I think it's right now, and this is the great thing, the LRound team gets it. They get it's about user adoption. And it, even in the wallet itself, if you look at the top of the wallet, it has an adoption thing up at the top that kind of shows the left side of a bell curve of a technology adoption cycle. So you can kind of get the idea that right now it's like, oh, we've got 1 million wallets and the price is $254. And then you look up that S curve and you see like the next market, like 10 million users, and then the next market, like 90 million users. And then the mass adoption hits, you know, that's like the 1 billion users, right? In crypto. But I think once LRON gets to, I think, what was it, the 60 million or 20 million mark? I think Benjamin Minku, the CEO of LRound, who used to be a core NEM developer, he's basically said at that point, LRound would basically exceed the GDP of Romania. So, you know, it's going to be pretty good. They have people that have won mathematician stuff. They've got AI. They have people from, you know, some developers from Zilliqa and from Earth ETH and NEM and Brave. They self-funded too. This is a self-funded project. They did do like kind of like a fair launch IDO thing with the Mire launchpad, or not Mire, Binance launchpad, when all they really had was the game, while they were kind of giving people the opportunity to hop on. And then once they launched the native chain, which was about 13 or 14 months ago, they switched to, you know, the full-on tokenomics and the network that's running today. So it's
right now, like, the best way to make a buck off eGold is to be getting the staking rewards basically simultaneously with the ownership of the coin.
The best way to get rewards right now, like, I'm getting 300% right now on the exchange in liquidity pool.
300% exchange. Oh, so
you're getting 95% of the exchange token emissions are going to people that lock up for a year. And then there's a vesting release schedule after a year. So they lock you into long-term gains. And then it releases at 16 to 17% a month. And by that point in time, they'll have over 100 items on the exchange and hopefully the synthetics and lending. So people will want to keep the MEX token and utilize it. And then it'll go cross-chain. And then 80% of the rewards go to the stakers and 20% get burned.
Okay. So your LP that you're in, that's, what are the two parts of that? It's MEX and?
MEX and eGold.
eGold. So you're basically, you're basically speculating both on the value of those two things plus the 300% APY at this point.
Yeah, so exactly. So what I do is I harvest the MEX and I put it in a single-sided MEX staking pool, which also earns 300%.
Okay, so you compound that periodically, or is it
automatic? 264 right now, OB.
I compound it multiple times a day. There's a reinvest all button that makes the single-sided pool really easy. It takes just a few seconds to harvest and reinvest. And I'm in it for 5 weeks right now, and I'm up 321% on my token supply. And, the value of the tokens are down from, you know, when I first started because the market's down. But when the market recovers, you know, the dollar value attached to that will be substantial.
And I've done it for about a week and a half to 2 weeks. And I mean, it's a simple, super simple, fast. Love it. It's been great.
So you're doing this all via the Mire wallet, you said? Like, what?
Yeah, so
you just Mire app store, or what are you doing?
Yeah, so I went to Mire.com. Actually, I have it posted at the top of the page.
Oh.
There's a referral for it. And you basically download the Myer wallet, and you can do a seed phrase, or you can do an encrypted file to, like, you know, iCloud or Google, and they ask you to verify your password periodically to make sure that you don't forget it. But it's really secure. It's almost ledger secure, and it's multi-asset. You can do Bitcoin, ETH, BNB, USDC, Elrond. And then Holoride, which is the first token to launch on it, they won the CES Best Tech. It's an extended reality play-to-earn, basically headset, you know, extended reality VR type thing. So passengers in cars, as we kind of move through the, you know, the kids in the back of the car have something to do, or as we all start getting into that Tesla taxi future, you can put on your headset and do some play-to-earn gaming on your ride, and it kind of feels like you had a ride at, like, Disneyland, you know, kind of moves, you know, with the movements and direction of the car and speed. Pretty cool.
Huh.
So that's a that one's going to go across multiple chains. I was like, wow, that's a cool, like, little, you know, potential could be a neat little long-term thing if people, you know, want to buy into it. But they did an exclusive, that was the first launch on the exchange. And you'll love this, because they had some liquidity locusts come in, or mercenary capital, and they basically changed the tokenomics to lock up the rewards to 95%. So the liquidity locusts got the hell out and said, stop robbing the community of the funds. And then when the Holoride token launched, there was a couple people that set up bots, and you know how IDOs go, right? People, basically, the bots kind of take everything and then they dump it. So the Elrond team actually bought back from the bot individual and the high net worth individual that did that. The individuals gave some money back to the community, and the Elrond bought back tokens from them, and then they redistributed it to the people that had high slippage that lost out in the IDO, and they're going back to kind of think about a different way of launching tokens going forward. So I call that capitalism with a conscience.
Well, I mean, a lot of places have had problems with IDOs.
Yeah. How many places buy funds out of pocket and return it to the community?
Right. That's good. Yeah, the proper way to launch IDOs, and, like, we've seen this with, like, what they're trying with White Whale and, you know, these kind of interesting bootstrapping protocols and whatnot. So, yeah, it's been evolving, and some of these new strategies were not like fleshed out until, like, this year. So some of the older stuff, yeah, it was just too prone to manipulation, essentially. And it's been a problem across DeFi to some extent or the other.
Yeah. So the Myer team also have a launch pad, but it's a ticket-based system as opposed to, like, a tokenized launch pad. Because they said, well, we don't need to tokenize our launch pad. We just, if people pass KYC and they want to participate in the launch pad, then they can get tickets and get the drops and get the early advantage. Unfortunately, the United States is treated like, you know, in North Korea and Iran and Cambodia and places, and we don't get the opportunity. But but that was something that they have as well. It was kind of neat. So I'm most looking forward to additional tokens launching, so the exchange, so I can start putting some of these locked max rewards to work. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the lending and synthetic options are as those come on board.
Oh, and do they have UST on there yet, or not yet?
It is USDC.
Oh, they have USDC now?
Yeah, they started with USDC. I've been bugging them a little bit about UST. I think that they would definitely consider it. They have a Polygon partnership, and Reef DeFi, and Orion Protocol is coming, which the Orion Trading Protocol, not Orion Money, Orion Protocol. It's a decentralized exchange that goes, you know, basically works across the centralized exchanges and decentralized exchanges, but it's a decentralized trading deck. So that's, it's the ORN token. That'll be on there as well as a way of potentially acquiring some UST from other sources like Binance or, you know, maybe Astroport.
Got it. So like, yeah, I was trying to figure out, yeah, is it possible to just ship UST, but, or some primitive, but not yet.
Not at this exact moment, because I mean the exchange launched 5 weeks ago, but I'm sure it'll be something that's coming because I think everybody's taking UST except for Cardano.
Cardano,
yeah. Charles will probably say he'll take it if somebody wants to port it, but he's going to obviously work with Cody and DJed. But
yeah, right, of course. what kind of transactional speeds and whatnot does EGLD have at this point? Do you know?
Oh, it's super fast. It's like 6 seconds Terra speeds.
Okay, yeah. super fast.
So zips along right now.
Yeah, and the transaction fees are like 0.0001 EGLD for a simple transaction, and a more complex transaction might be a little bit more. I mean, you're talking like 20 cents and less type for a smart contract interaction.
I will say Luna spoiled me with knowing I can change my transaction fee to UST. So I hate seeing my e-gold just wither away a little bit every day.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had e-gold in my wallet and I've been doing like 6 or 7 transactions on the blockchain a day. And like, I've never come close to even remotely running out. And I just got dust in there.
Yeah, it's like on Cosmos, like when you do a transaction, like the transaction fee is such microscopic dust, is like you just like you're never gonna, you wouldn't even use up one atom in a decade or something. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like that. And that can be adjusted through governance. But they got 3,200 nodes. There's mostly the whole network, the whole blockchain is community run at this point. The only thing that hasn't really been fleshed out to make it fully decentralized is the governance aspect, and that should be coming in 22. And at that point, you know, pretty unstoppable. I mean, it's just see how it works and fares against the competition. But in terms of a decentralized, you know, extremely scalable blockchain that has extremely good tokenomics, I mean, the tokenomics are better than Kadena. I mean, you can argue about which tech and programming language is better. Elrond's EVM compatible, you know, and it's easy to operate with.
Yeah, I mean, like on a tokenomics basis, like it's really tough to beat Terra. That's the first thing. Like after that, it's like there's layers of different levels of tokenomic design to the point of being like either hyperinflationary and really shitty, all the way to like different levels of pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm really picky about my tokenomics. I have a very hard criteria of stuff I invest in. I think eGold is the next to Terra Luna is the best tokenomics I found. Harmony has somewhat of a similar mechanism in tokenomics, but their supply is like crazy high.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know that like if you're holding for 5 to 10 years or some longer term, that, you know, your value is not being eroded over that time too much.
Right. And this supply is something that would, if for whatever reason the transactions didn't take over the emissions, the supply would all be out within 10 years. But I mean, how quickly the adoption's happening, I think it's going to top out in the low 20 million range. The theoretical maximum of eGold is 31.4. It's exactly pi, just with the decimal moved. Kind of funny. But but it'll never hit that. It'll you know, low to mid 20s. So you're going to have Bitcoin like supply, but with the ability to earn yield on something that is, you know, adaptive state sharding, which basically randomizes the, you know, the consensus and the luck. It can't be 51% attacked. It's 3,200 nodes, extremely secure, extremely fast, extremely inexpensive to use.
And those nodes are fixed, or there's going to be like more nodes over time, or how does that work?
There's already a, no, that's not fixed. That's just where they're at right now with what they need. There's actually nodes in queue waiting to be spun up, and they're going to start phase four and expand that even further. And they're only even, they're not even using the multiple shards because they only need to use the one shard right now. But I mean, in testnet, they've done over 300,000 transactions a second on four shards. I mean, it's, and they can add more shards as they need. I think it's 64 shards, if I remember right.
Got it. So are they doing, so they don't have a native stable coin. They're going to bring liquidity from other chains, essentially, is their plan?
Yeah, there's no native stable coin. They're planning on bringing it from other chains. So I totally expect Terra to be there.
Yeah, it's simply a matter of someone like putting the bridge together or whatever, right?
Yeah, they have the bridge for USDC. They were originally going to start with BUSD, but they changed. The community said, "Nah, we want USDC to start." So, I mean, they can easily bridge UST.
I don't know if anyone in the crowd had like questions for you or whatever.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I think they heard this earlier from me, but
oh really?
But not everybody was on the call earlier. There's some of them were, but some of them weren't.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I speculated on EGLD up and down a little bit during the last year market, but I didn't really like think too heavy on it. What happens is sometimes you get down your own little like pathway to some DeFi thing, and then it takes so much time and effort to figure out what you're doing in that, you know, you can only divide your attention in so many directions to some extent. So,
well, but also think about how many people you've helped along the way, bro. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of part of it too, is like, by talking it out a little bit, you sort of like refine the idea in your own head to some extent. So sometimes the babbling on really sort of like helps you cement in your head some strategies and like lets you think it through. And I try to sort of simplify my scenario to, I've sort of decided, like I've simplified it to, okay, like what do I want out of stablecoin yield? What are the ways I can get like high volatility growth exposure? And then like additional to that, my more recent foray has been more heavy into, okay, like how can I take somewhere in the middle where like, you know, you get to a certain level, can you just run, you know, some bots and things and basically earn yield without, while also simultaneously getting some price exposure, but then beat, like, say, for example, staking yields and things like that. So, like, it's some combination of those things that I think gets you there. Is some, like, because you want growth, you want cash flow, and then you want, like, a decent stablecoin system. And then like maybe the fourth tier of that is how do you save money on shit you buy? So, cause you don't have to earn as much if you don't, right? Like if you, the things that you buy, yep, you're getting back on, that's always a helpful situation.
That's my strategy right there. The VGX, Luna, E-Gold, and StormX.
Exactly. That's how I kind of came upon the StormX, is I was looking at all the different ways to save a buck too. And there's different sort of these, all these like interesting crypto debit card options came about. And the thing I didn't care too much about on the Crow token one was just the sheer like they do have the most interesting debit card. It's just really expensive to get involved with it, right? Like it's like $400,000 worth of like Crow to get yourself the freaking it's crazy. It's like a 10% cashback debit card, right?
Voyager's gonna wipe the floor with Crow when people realize you get 3% back and 9% for savings plus all the other stuff on top of it. I mean,
yeah, the savings makes the yield off your savings makes a big difference, because like, so if you got 100k in there and you're making 10% yield, and then the coin that you're getting as a reward that makes yield, and then you somehow have this like liquid staking StormX solution where the crap you buy, and like with that debit card, it actually substantially becomes a reasonable portion of the things you buy. Like StormX before, like you couldn't do Amazon, you couldn't do a few other things that were popular, right?
So the more things that like you're going to use on there that you know for sure you can use do help. Because right now, like even on Terra, so let's say, for example, you get your Alice card, right? That's great and everything. But unless they offer a cashback reward system, it's not really, I'm not sure it makes sense to use that for that purpose.
No, my Alice card would be just a backup card in case I had like a fraudulent issue or something that blocked me from using either my StormX or Voyager card.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I think now the game changer would be is if you're earning Anchor Yield and you're getting, you know, some like 3% cash back or something like that would be interesting too. So who knows? But
well,
like,
well, with Subera and Kato, I mean, they do have that, hey, deposit a certain amount and have your membership paid for free and get earnings back on the platform.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, some of those tricks are going to be fun. Yeah, like if you create like an Amazon subscribe and save type of situation. You know, it's actually interesting about that, by the way. Like, technically speaking, the money goes into sort of like La La Land somewhere. And I was joking about it with the folks at Kado a little bit. But I was like, you basically like get a bunch of free shit. And like, who's actually going to figure out where that money is and like how that yield's being used? At the end of the day, you'll just be getting like subscriptions for shit, and they can label it anything they want. It's like, oh, okay, you paid for a subscription, so you're actually paying for a service. But the yield, like, who's going to measure that whole thing? As far as you're concerned, you're paying for a membership and they're sending you like a magazine.
Tax-free services.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, I can dig that, you know. So that looks interesting too. The Kado situation looks really, really interesting. Because like one of the things I had suggested to them early on was like, okay, get a bunch of crap on there, but get a lot of stuff that normal people want, like, you know, like soap and like, I don't, you know, like the shit you buy on Amazon subscribe and save.
Yeah.
I was like, get all that stuff on there.
I was looking at it for Apple stuff today because I just got a new MacBook Air. And
yeah.
And I was just like, oh, well, I can't get Apple stuff on StormX. So I started shopping on Kado.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Like, cause like, yeah, I tend to get Apple stuff. I tend to get like some Amazon junk and I, you know, like, but it does make sense to be able to, I like, for example, Amazon subscribe and save because like, I don't like grocery shopping and whatnot, right? Like, I don't want to go for picking up toilet paper and whatever. So I found it to be like great to have all that shit come to your doorstep. And the funny thing is during like COVID and whatever, when like, remember there was like a shortage of all that stuff for a while. Like I had all my stuff, you know, stored up in my closet over there with, you know, plenty of paper towel, toilet papers. Well, everyone was like rushing for that in line. But the nice thing about having all that stuff off your plate is, you know, the stuff just comes to your door every day. And if you could have it on your interest yield, because you put enough on the platform to like generate enough yields to just buy your shit, right? Like that's pretty cool. Like everything sort of shows up at your doorstep and you're not really worried about those things anymore. So that's another thing I tell my normie friends. I'm like, okay, look, what you want to do is you want to sort of like de-risk your life. And one of the ways you do that is you earn enough yield to pay for your normal crap. So if you don't have enough money to pay for like, if you're not generating enough yield to pay for your Netflix subscription, you know, with yield, then you need to cancel your Netflix subscription because it just like, you don't live in that world anymore. In a Web3 world, you just want to be earning yield to pay for that shit.
I mean, or you can get Crow and pay $400,000 and get free Netflix.
Yeah, 400K. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That seems like a really expensive timeshare at that level. That's the funny thing. But I guess if you spend a lot of money on your debit card, it makes some sense. But 400K is a good amount.
You can still split it with family members. Come on. You can at least save a little bit there.
Yeah. Although, if I had gotten my, like, Crow, 400K worth of Crow at 10 cents, that shit's worth, like, 60 cents right now or something like that. So I would have done pretty well either way. But, yeah, it's funny. But then that would be weird because then imagine that. Like, let's say your Crow token or whatever went up, like, 10x, right? The crazy thing is to get a 10% cash back on a debit card, are you going to have that as the primary coin you own? Like you're going to carry like millions of dollars worth of Crow token or whatever because you want a 10% cash back on a debit card? It's like the math seems weird. Like at that point, you'd probably get first off, right? Right, wouldn't you? Like at some point, you'd be diversifying off of there because, oh, like I get like a cashback debit card, but like it cost me $3 million.
I'll tell you a funny story. A guy popped in our space the other day, and he was an early adopter of Crow, and he was like, oh, yeah, I bought it at 5 cents, made a shit ton of money off of it. We started telling him about Voyager and what they're doing. He's like, oh my God. He's like, I got to get out of this now. This is not good.
So yeah, that's the weird thing about these membership tokens is like when they go up really high in value, you're like, wait a minute, like, is this where I want to be? Or it doesn't make more sense to like take, you know, cash that and do something else with it because you have like a high opportunity cost with it, right? So it happened to me with StormX and I was like, I don't know. Do I want to leave all this in my, like, I had the like highest level membership tier because I bought the thing like at, you know, a penny or whatever that was. So I had it like at a pretty low price. But then I was like, okay, what to do with this? And when it had gone up quite a bit, I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to leave it all there. It's not worth a few discounts here and there. So I actually moved it. I bought Luna with it. I think I moved my StormX to Luna when it was like maybe in the 20 cents range. So actually I did much better by being in Luna than I would have been if I stayed in the StormX for that purpose, just for the like cashback rewards, right? So this is the problem with those membership tiers is like if you moon the token, you're like, wait a minute, like I'm not sure it makes sense to keep it for the membership tier. Because like how many like trips, you know, or whatever would I have to take to make it make sense at that level, right?
Well, right. If you're spending StormX token instead of stablecoin, you can take profits that way.
Yeah, actually, when I was making a high yield on my StormX, I was like, hey, look, I'm making enough income per month off my StormX token itself that I technically make my trips with just that alone, which is interesting, too.
You know, that's a good point, too. It's like, at what threshold does it become really useless or when are you going to hit that break-even point? And that's where like the argument between Crow and like a VGX is like totally different because VGX keeps putting money back in your pocket where Crow really doesn't do anything.
Well, just imagine StormX freaking like, you know, go into, you know, over a buck or whatever. And I'm sitting here with all this staking rewards and I'm like, well, shit, I might as well just go buy, you know, like a new Shelby or something, you know?
Yeah, like a little jet plane or something.
Yeah. And by the way, all the rewards I get back from that, those aren't going to go on the tax report.
Yeah, right. You're going to pay for your little car.
And pay for my car in StormX rewards and earn more StormX. Oh, it's just the future. It's going to be.
Yeah. So, I think the ultra kind of coupon concept of some of these things is really interesting in that way.
If we've done anything tonight, we've opened eyes to VGX, StormX, Terra, and Eagold. if yeah, anyone right. hadn't looked at them before, they're like, maybe we should check into these ones.
right.
And honestly, I mean, anything, I'm not well-versed in Terra or Eagold at all, but if anybody has any questions in regards to VGX or anything related, you can always reach out to, and I know for a fact, you know, Sefi, Obi will get you on Luna, no doubt in my mind. The Eagold, any questions, I'm sure Obi is willing to talk to anybody. So if anybody has any questions at any point, 100%, I mean, that's the reason we do this. So if anybody, you know, always step up, ask, DM, follow, whatever.
Yep.
I'm working on a coupon as a service token, and you guys are going to be the leaders. Somehow I'm going to take your rewards and give it back to the community.
You're going to loop all that shit in one big wrapper.
Yep. I'm almost done with the coding.
It's going to go like ship it to KuCoin and like you're going to buy, you're going to arbitrage the 1% off the debit card.
Looks like a DAPA requested the mic. So let's see what they have to say.
Yeah. What's up, everybody? I've been listening.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I've been listening very carefully, and I've now checked out this Eagold thing, and I've set up my Meyer wallet.
Nice.
As I was listening, and I'm checking out the liquidity pool option here, and it looks like there's a lock logo next to the that fat 300%. Yeah, can you explain what that's about?
Yeah. So what they did, what's going on is that they have a multiplier attached. If you choose to lock your rewards,
oh, that's what you were saying.
Where 95%.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So 95% of the rewards are going to the lock people that choose to lock. So on the E-Gold Mex pool, you actually get a 15x multiplier on your APR.
All right. I see that. But how do you have to lock for? Doesn't really say.
It's a year.
Oh, it doesn't even say.
Yeah, so it's a year, and then the tokens start unlocking on a 16 to 17% per month schedule.
And you're not concerned about the volatility of these two, of this pair,
because it seems
like I didn't look at Max yet, but Eagle like had a, it went up to 500 and now it's down at 200 something.
Yeah, the 500 was when the exchange pumped and there was a lot of mercenary capital that came in. Oh. So it inflated the token a little bit too high. It's come down to previous support right now. And I'm not worried about it.
Is it meant to appreciate or is it meant to be stable? What's the general idea there?
Oh, it's meant to appreciate. If you look at the supply, over 50% staked, and there's 20 million or so tokens and less than 2 million are on exchanges. At one point, we got under 1 million tokens on exchanges, but Binance went and bought a bunch. So that we've been slowly dwindling that exchange supply down. But it works very much like Bitcoin, similar supply. And it's all based on users that come in to use the platform and buy the tokens. And the more people that participate in the network, the higher the price goes.
Got it. Okay. And then there's the... obviously, this is the impermanent loss thing we just talked about, but is there a, like in Luna, where you have, you want to stake a certain minimum amount for the rewards to, be worth taking? Like 100 Luna staked, otherwise it's not worth, claiming those rewards. Is there a minimum threshold for staking the LP here, or can you pretty much do any amount?
Yeah, so the exchange, locks you into every 30 minutes of harvesting or $10 USD equivalent. So anything beyond that, you can push the snowball an inch every minute or however so often until you have a snowman. I mean, it's literally up to you
how much you want to harvest. The transaction fees, like what is it based in?
Oh, it's like a 0.0001.
It's based on
four zeros in E-Gold.
I see. Okay.
So it's, quadruple 0.01.
Now notice you cannot buy the E-Gold directly on the website if you're in the US. So I guess you just have to go to KuCoin or something to get it.
Yeah, in the US, it depends on the state you live in and whether or not the payment providers like MoonPay or Ramp have a license in your state.
Mm.
So, and then you have to do KYC if you buy off of Meijer directly, but you can buy in KuCoin or on crypto.com and send directly to Meijer.
And you get, it looks like I get the MEX too. And that's also on KuCoin.
MEX is not listed on KuCoin yet. Although KuCoin is set up to support all ESDTs, which are the Elrond standard digital tokens. Haven't listed.
Sorry. So where do you get MEX?
Right now, you get it on the Meijer exchange itself.
Oh, so Meijer.exchange. The E-Gold for the MEX.
Yeah, I just converted my E-Gold to MEX, correct?
I see.
Yep. And so your principal is fully recoverable. So if you pair your E-Gold and MEX together in the pool and you want to, for whatever reason, say, hey, I've harvested enough. I want to withdraw my principal. You can just withdraw your LP tokens and then take your principal back.
Got it. Okay. This is interesting.
And then stake that for what? It would be 14%, right? 12 to 14%.
Yeah, yeah. Most staking or most validators are about 14% right now.
Staking the LP, you mean?
No, Spirit E-Gold one staking in the wallet. If you were to stake E-Gold in the Meijer wallet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, but your gains potential are on the exchange right now are far exceed the staking. So unless you have a very large supply of E-Gold, I just recommend going to the exchange. Unless you've got like 100 E-Gold and you want to stake some, so you have perpetual like gas fees and not everything's on in one place. But if you've got less than a dolphin, I think the classified dolphin is 25 to 99. Whales are 100 plus. crabs are like 10 to 24. The distribution of the tokens, I should probably also mention, there's a very wide distribution of the tokens, and the majority of holders, you know, hold less than 10. So actually, a lot of people hold less than one, too. So it's the whale category is like, I think, less than 1% of the holders right now.
So if I mean, I could dip my toes in with just a little bit, see how it goes, right? I mean, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it feels just, like just keeping in mind doing, that if you lock the rewards, they're locked.
I'm doing an LP on CoinEx with Flux, which I've been tracking for a few days, and it's doing pretty well. Is anybody else doing that? You know about that?
I haven't. No, I haven't done anything with Flux.
So it's like 253% APY. It's kind of amazing.
You want to tell us about it?
Well, I don't know. It's funny. I knew I had Flux, and I went and looked in my Zellcore wallet. I was like, where did I put that? It's not there. So I'm like panicking. So I looked. Oh. So I'm looking around like, oh yeah, I forgot. I put it into this CoinEx thing, and you just pair it with USDT, and it every day you put it in this AMM thing,
mm-hmm.
and every day it gives you earnings.
Yeah, this gives you earnings. You can watch it grow every 6 seconds.
Every 6 seconds, that's even better.
Yep.
Yeah. Ideally, with LP positions, if you can have them auto compound, then it helps mitigate sort of impermanent loss issues. But if you think Flux is something that's going to go up a lot in value, yeah, you're rewarded with the high APY to provide the LP. But like anything, you usually want that APY to be at least above. A lot of times, you want it to be above 100%. Which in this case, it sounds like it is. But you also want to see how long that APY is likely to last. So, because if you leave it in there for a very long time, and let's say Flux does really, really well, then you might miss out on a lot of the gains for this sort of like APY benefit. And sometimes that works out depending on your goals, but other times you're like, well, why did I just leave it in Flux and like let it ride?
Yeah, I'm wondering that too. But like I've only had it in there for 4 days, and you get a little report at the end of each day, and it tells you what the day's APY was. And so each day so far, it's been, you know, 100% or more APY.
Yeah, but and also
and like it's actually paying out dividends in USD.
The alternative to that would be like, for example, in your case, like the Flux, like USDT, you know, let's say rebalancer, if that is an option, because then you don't really suffer from the, you don't suffer from nearly as much of like the impermanent loss issues in a sense. And you're basically creating a kind of an auto compounding scenario there as well. So that's another option for.
Yeah, it's a good option. I just somehow this is like working really well, and I don't understand quite the mechanics of it. So I'm gonna have to study this a little bit more.
Have anyone found a calculator for LPs with the APY bonus?
No, I mean I just take the APR and then you have the multiplier and it, and then the compounding frequency. Like on Elrond, if you click on the info button next to the APY, it'll actually show you, you know, the description and the calculation.
The trouble with those calculators, though, is it depends on like what kind of assumptions those calculators have as far as like the APY falling, as well as like trying to predict the underlying coin prices in the LP. Like none of those calculators really do a whole lot of justice, and you know, in really predicting anything all that useful. So
it's good for like the 6 seconds you're looking at it.
Exactly. And but not only that, but like it for new people, it makes you think that the calculator is more predictable than it is. Just like, because like you'll think to yourself, well, why would there be a calculator if it doesn't predict anything? So your like assumption is going to be, but that it's useful just because it exists. And
you'll find out later, uh-oh, like this doesn't actually work the way I thought it would. So I think it really depends on...
Yeah, especially when you're locked in for a year.
Oh, yeah, especially if you're locked in. So, yeah, those are... That can be interesting. But at the same time, like, when you're locked in for a year, these are things that it makes sense to do, like, small amounts of cash on, I think, so that you're not... If it works out, great. If it, you know, you're, you know, make slightly better than... Like, in those situations, if you're making at least 20%, you're probably... You know, you're not losing anything, at least, right?
No, I think the worst you could lose is 28%, really, doing permanent loss, like over a course of a year, and the gains are going to be, you know, 10x plus that, you know, 12 to 15x that, plus the token has deflationary tokenomics, and it has use utility, right? So you'll be able to do synthetics, you'll be able to participate in multiple pools. You'll be able to eventually take loans off of it. So it should be something that accrues, you know, that, you know, is a valuable token to have on the platform over time. And if you don't find it valuable, you can always convert it back into e-gold, stake it, and just, you know, go back to the prime asset.
And I could see the money go up every day and click a button and reinvest it.
Exactly.
Which is the best part.
Yeah, no, it's really
good. This 300%, by the way, for the e-gold.
Mm-hmm.
That's the APR. The APY is saying is over 2,000%.
Is that giving you the auto compounding amount?
Or yeah, it's a daily auto compound, it says. Wait, I thought you said you had to compound it manually.
You do have to compound it manually.
So I wonder why
it says. Yeah, every day after, like, or every 30 minutes or the $10, you can re-compound it.
Yeah, I compound multiple times.
So they're assuming that you do it once a day. That's how they get that 2,000% APY.
Right. Yeah, I compound probably, you know, 4 or 5 times a day.
So no one's come up with the auto compounder for this yet, I assume.
No, unfortunately. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it once you've gotten used to auto compounders, even the concept of it, like pushing this button every day is kind of a pain in the ass. Like, it's true on a lot of wallets.
It's really fun though. It's addicting.
It is after a while. And then you're like, oh shit, I haven't like auto compounded. I haven't compounded my thing like in a week. You know, some of you start like losing track of all these things after a while.
Yeah. That's why I try to keep it to less than 5. So I remember them. But yeah, no, I find this one to be one of the better ones, but it's not like a spec where it's going to, you know, or an Apollo where it's just going to auto, or a Stator where it just does it for you. You do have to go in and, you know, hit harvest and then restake.
You should like message the Stator people and tell them to get this one on board quickly, because mm-hmm. they're trying to go cross-chain, right? So
yeah,
that would help.
Oh man, if they could, if they could do what they're doing with Luna with e-gold staking, oh man. I mean, I do it myself every day anyway. It's like part of my daily ritual now, but if I didn't have to, that'd be cool. I wouldn't have all the transactions in my wallet.
Well, to some degree, it's like if you want something bad enough, you just have to go and like pester them until they make it. So that, like, because if it's going to make you enough money, you should just spend the time to go have them make it for you.
Well, I know that they're going cross chain, right? They're going to do Solana and Near. So, I mean, why not throw Elrond on the list, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And who knows what their development timeline is and whatnot. But if they, you know, these things are like anywhere, I think they're focusing, when I talk to them, they're focusing on the chains where they feel like they have the highest possible liquidity, because obviously, you know, they want to make some fees off that system. So they tend to prioritize the largest possible chains first. I don't know where e-gold is in that process, but
it was number 22. Now I think it's in the 30s.
Okay.
It's not like it's super far down any lists.
Right, right. So yeah, that's how they look at it for those kinds of projects.
Yeah, it was.
Well,
it was,
thanks for doing this, guys. I appreciate it. And just want to say to Seffy, I hope you feel better. I got 2 kids at home with COVID right now. Thankfully, I'm doing okay, but I hope you get better soon.
Yeah, mine's not been too bad. It actually, like this Omicron feels like almost like a common cold, pretty much just like a common cold, actually, for me. Yeah, it was just like
I heard you talking about it during your 6-hour marathon earlier today.
I didn't have enough, so I came in to hang out with you guys too. So
yeah, you're crazy, man. You gotta
nothing better to do anyway. So it's kind of just like hanging out.
We appreciate it a lot, bro.
We really do. And that's cool. I appreciate you guys who are working hard to promote VGX, because thanks to Seffy, I ended up buying a little bag that, unfortunately, has not been doing so well lately. So I'm looking forward to it going up.
And just wait for 22, my friend.
I'm waiting patiently.
Yeah, it should be a very good year for VGX. I mean, hell, 21 was a good year. It's up 100. It's up 11x against Bitcoin.
Yeah, I just bought it the wrong time.
Yeah, it happens to everybody.
Yeah, that's okay. All right, I'm going to sign off. Thanks, y'all.
Cool. I think 2022 is going to be pretty good for crypto in general, though. So maybe I'm the only 2022 bull here, but I don't bother subscribing to the cycle concept anymore. I think it's mostly pointless nonsense.
The cycle is pointless nonsense because we didn't have DeFi. I mean, there's lots of leverage in the system. Bitcoin was the only true decent thing that actually had anything on it prior to really 2020, let's say. So you could say ETH or Litecoin or whatever, but I don't buy it. So, but institutions, the money printing, the macroeconomic, events with the pandemic. There's just so many things,
debit cards, credit cards, and everything.
Cards, lending, loan, all that stuff. And we're at the phase right now where we're at the end of the early innovators phase of a technology adoption cycle. We're approaching the chasm of moving from early innovators to early adopters phase. That's going to be 2022 and probably into the end of 2023 before we get to about 15% of the global adoption, and then you start the mass adoption phase. So that's the way I see it in terms of the adoption rates, because of how quickly the technology is being adopted and the numbers that we have, which may or may not be inflated, but the awareness, at least in the United States, by most like Pew Research and such, is somewhere around a 16% awareness of crypto. Whether that means people truly understand it is obviously up for debate, but we still, if you look at the number of people that have downloaded a crypto app versus the ones that actually use it, I mean, Coinbase is like at an 11% market penetration on active traders, and Voyager's at a 40% for funded accounts versus verified accounts. So a similar metric, like Voyager's already kicking ass on a smaller scale. So it'll be really curious to see if that can kind of translate and move forward. But my thoughts are, the thing that really kind of worries me for 22 getting knocked off the rails is the cessation of the tapering and what that means in terms of interest rates. Because one thing that people, I think, aren't paying attention to enough is that during this whole pandemic, there's been an awful lot of furlough happening forbearance, where they're just kicking the can down the road on mortgage payments, but they still owe and still accruing interest. And that's going to butt up with the interest rates rising for mortgages. So you're going to have the banks are going to be overloaded with people trying to refi their homes, plus the people that are trying to get refis for the forbearances. And that's going to overload the TradFi in a massive way and kind of freak people out. So I think we will have like a mini bear market in 2022. But it will have kind of one of those V-shaped type recoveries that we've seen in the traditional market, especially if the money turns back on. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like in property in particular, like if you drive around cities and you kind of just look at how much commercial real estate looks distressed. It's pretty worrisome, right? Just that alone.
Decimated.
So, you know, but then at this, on the other hand, like you look at Airbnb and how like a significant portion of their like destinations are essentially saturated, which is also interesting for now. So there's kind of a weird dynamic going on, but especially on the commercial real estate side, like if you look at a big driver in the U.S. economy, which is traditionally like U.S. healthcare in particular, like the amount of like there just is no more like pot of gold at the end of the rainbow to pay, say for example, like healthcare people any more than they're getting paid. And the problem is that you're essentially then creating stagflation with that particular industry, even if other places do go up in pay. If that does not, then you have like this big cyclical problem of like people in America needing healthcare, but like nobody wants to go into it, or like you won't have access to it. So then that means the way they're going to default on your like their debt obligations to all of that system, right? Like Medicare and all the different like healthcare, like government funded activities, is what's happening is like you'll think you have that shit available for your retirement, but then like you won't be able to get into, say, a clinic because there's nobody, you know, there's not enough people working there because it's not worth it. So the stagflation is such that like if you look at pay in that sector, the pay has not been going up for like last several years, even though the inflation has been rising really quickly. And you could sort of have that problem, say, for example, in other sectors. But if you look at sectors where the labor is so intense, especially post-COVID or peri-COVID, where like people are working like crazy hours, then the problem becomes you now have an uncompetitive like pay environment. And if you go to any given city in the United States or a lot of medium to small sized towns, that employee base actually usually does pretty well professionally and is buying the houses and the, you know, cars and the, you know, different things you have to sell, but is like it's been a like an economy driver of like money sloshing around, right? So if that group gets relatively distressed and they're like, well, you know, that's like 15 to 20% of the economy, you start having people not wanting to buy the bigger house or, you know, the fancy car or whatever, then it's there'll be a looping effect of that. And somewhere down the line, it's going to affect all the other like commercial establishments like restaurants and gyms and whatever, right? Because it like you can't have an industry that large without having consequences if that group of people is not spending their money.
Yeah, in general, there's going to be, you know, some sectors are going to be pretty hard by the tapering. You know, the corporate lending will tighten up. That, you know, there probably should be some layoffs, which doesn't help the maximum employment mandate of the Treasury and the Fed, right? And so they're going to want to turn the printers back on, and then that's going to be coincided with, you know, the interest rates rising, which, you know, is going to cause the, you know, really everything to move a little risk off. So I think at some point everything kind of butts up until they kind of say, okay, is inflation quote unquote under control enough that we could start printing again? And then at that point, the market will get all happy again. But I think, I don't know. I just kind of see first quarter as kind of being pretty bullish. Some big news, like, you know, Will Clemente posted that a lot of the Bitcoin buying that has been happening, especially over the last several months, has been 10 million plus type purchases, which makes me think that, you know, which institutions have been buying the dip, and what are we going to see in these quarterly reports come January? And, you know, that could be some bullish momentum to have a pretty strong first quarter. And then, you know, the whole tapering and interest rate discussion and what that means, I think the summer, it could go either way. But I expect some kind of dip around, you know, tax time like there usually is in TradFi.
Yeah, it's like it's tough to sell. It's tough to say on the crypto side where it all like how it affects the just the general market trend and such, and whether people move more into crypto as a result or what, you know.
Yeah, I think consumers will, and I think altcoins will succeed, but I think Bitcoin, which kind of is still kind of the market driver, you know, with the futures and the, you know, the corporations, the ones that are doing a lot of the heavy buying right now, being the ones that are going to be concerned most about these, the tapering in interest rates. I think it's going to cause a little bit of a cautious stall, even though I think the altcoins will be pretty bullish.
This is one of the reasons why, by the way, like when it comes to proof of stake yield earning assets, whether it's Luna, whether it's like Atom or Polkadot or whatever, I'm looking always to get larger buys on the dips on those, only because I can kind of lock in that yield at a lower basis for those coins. And then like if the coins go up, then I can basically create a cash flow source off those if I want to, right? So I kind of go more of a, like if I was going to go like a normal coin, I'd buy like 100, then 200, 400, like on a, you know, 10% like grid on, like if I can see a decent bottom on a, you know, like a high, you know, even if it's a hyperinflationary yielder like Atom and Polkadot, I'll just go crazy on the bottom and like just do a 10x buy. Just because I can then like lock in those lower prices, and that's worked out really well for me as far as like creating like cash flow coins essentially.
Yeah, I like doing that on Polkadot because of the interest in Voyager, and plus it should coincide with a lot of parachain auctions that'll come out in the first 6 months of the year. You know,
oh, is all that coming out soon?
Yeah, I think Cardano is probably going to have a, you know, some stuff come out, and that'll run again. And like you could take some profits from those that you've been accruing and then dump them into Luna. I mean, I think Luna is just going to keep running. It'll have maybe it's a little 20% pullback for profits here and there, but I think it'll just consistently keep going. I mean, what are they going to, there's what, $60 million of Terra being minted today here. So pretty good clip.
Yeah, for sure.
Lucky's got a hand up, and then Baroness.
Hey guys, I just wanted to say thank you guys for all the time tonight. I'm going to head off to bed here. It's almost 3:30 in the morning. So have a great night, guys.
Have a good one.
I was actually nodding off until you guys were talking about medical and so forth, because that's actually my field of work currently. But yeah, backtracking on the whole parachain thing, I'm following Polkadot, their parachain technology that they're rolling out with. But sorry, guys. But for medical wise, the whole idea with like altcoins and NFTs, the technology behind that and so forth, like currently the way that the government has. We've been fighting with the government since 2007, the changeover on like Medicare, Medicaid, and the financing, how everything has been basically monopolizing to where everyone's insurance claims are through the government. And even with the military bases and so forth. But I'm seeing the trend where the next step is also with the home, with this tapering and so forth, is affecting the housing market, which is also with the government taking over like the new homes and then now building supplies. And watching the trends currently, I've seen that like people that are in government, not governance, but government is actually trying to buy up quite a big sack of Bitcoin in their own private wallets as individuals. But I definitely see the technology basis where we're going to be seeing a lot of Bitcoin pooling for finances in larger communities that are incorporated in the future. But I'm probably just too tired to really put in anything that knowledgeable. But I just have to say that there's a trend if you look back all the way in 2007.
Yeah, there's definitely a fair number of people like in the healthcare sector that do buy into crypto. And a lot of people in the COVID times right now, what happened is a lot of staff like got paid way more for doing like travel work, nurses and docs and this and that. So they dumped their normal jobs, went off to do this kind of travel work, made like, you know, double and triple incomes doing this. And then a lot of them were saving in crypto and such too. Like, you hear a lot of, you know, people talking and such and that kind of thing. So it's been interesting. I think more and more people are discovering the yield component of crypto. And so they're, the knowledge base when it comes to like which coins are useful and, you know, how to utilize those yields, I think is going to increase substantially over the next couple of years, I would say.
That's another reason why I'm really into Voyager and for their business institutions and so forth for business, because I myself in healthcare, I do a lot of contracting, but we also for hard asset properties, we end up owning a few hospital systems. And once we're able to kind of integrate the two worlds together, that kind of takes us out of the issue of more of a government control of we can't pay our employees X amount of dollars because it's all based off of what we're getting back from government for our taxes and what we're allowed in billing. And the billing is all controlled by what's paid out by, you know, Medicaid and Medicare for licensing.
Yeah, I went to the hospital earlier this year and I had a nurse from out of state. So I can, you were saying that, I was like, yep. And everybody's overworked and, you know, there's lots of unemployment, like I said, lots of forbearance and, you know, if maximum employment's the thing and they know that cutting, you know, tapering or raising interest rates is going to cause issues on their maximum goals, they might have to just continue on a little bit longer on the current present course with the higher inflation, as opposed to kind of, you know, going against the whole reason they started printing in the first place, which is to solve that problem, right? So really the Fed's in a no-win situation and by extension, the American people and really the rest of the world, especially those that are dollarized, are in a no-win situation. And crypto is the only way out. So what we have to do is get the word out. And the faster we can get people aware, the implementation will, of course, take time because we don't want to completely lose rule of law and create chaos. But we do need to get people at least started to be educated on how money works and get them thinking about digital assets so they can start pulling the trigger earlier rather than later. And we'll force the technology wave of adoption in government's hand. But we need to be a little bit on the cautious side about the implementation because of the, you know, the financial system right now is held together by wire and duct tape and bubble gum. So it's, I have friends that work in infrastructure on that.
I forgot his name, the guy from the Med. But I'm hoping with Voyager that they'll also implement a health savings account, HSAs, as an alternative for digital assets to create savings. That also is that way that you don't get double taxed on digital assets as well when you do a conversion or, you know, normal from your gains. That way you can end up purchasing your everyday, like over-the-counter products and other care that won't be insured, such as like chiropractic and so forth. So that's one of my big reasons why I follow Voyager.
Yeah, I love my HSA. It's the triple tax advantage account, so max it out every year. But what do you think about the speed of, you know, what we're running in terms of adoption on the technology adoption cycle? And what that, I think ultimately what the governments are trying to do with, you know, the regulation and trying to figure out how to collect their cut of their revenue or, you know, that they think that they're owed is, you know, they have to slow it down because, you know, they know that they need the revenue and they know that they need to move, the technology needs to move forward. But I don't think that they're going to be able to retain control over monetary policy. And and Fed eventually. I don't know. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, of course, on government Fed coupons, but maybe Hutch and Sefe can
see what my concern about. Is that just like they did with the optional of the Social Security numbers and doing our investing and paying, that they're going to try another pooling with you know, digital assets, starting with Bitcoin for you know, people optional to pay in, etc. And that's one of the things in history repeats itself that didn't work out the first time, but I have a foresight on that.
Yeah, I'm both very optimistic and happy about the direction that you know, the Web3 and the crypto are going, because it's more than just the finance side of it, right? There's a lot more technology and change that is going on at an exponential pace. But you know, the disruption to traditional services and rule of law and legislation are going to move at a much slower pace. So, you know, where is the balance between those two? Obviously, we're going to move quicker than governments, but you know, it is a concern of mine if we move too rapidly for some reason and disrupt the status quo too much. You know, it could be ugly. So, sorry to be down so early in the morning, but I'm just curious of people's thoughts of you know, the change of the technology that we're seeing over the next decade versus how quickly it's able to be implemented in a peaceful transition.
The only thing that seems logical, which is too liberal in my perspective, but the only thing logical is the idea of a circle economics change of everything, also known as donut economics.
Hey, I just wanted to check in on my man Sefi here. He's been going all day, and I heard he got the schmutz 19. You doing all right, Sefi?
Yeah, just chilling.
Man, I can hear it in your voice. I don't know. Is that just laryngitis from doing 10 hours or 12 hours of spaces, or is that the schmutz?
That's just a little bit of both.
Well, at least you got energy, man. That's good. I think I had it in November. I'm not for sure about it, but I had what I thought was a cold. Everything tasted delicious, but I was pretty fatigued for about, I don't know, almost a month after that. And my mom, I was at my mom's when I first, like I said, I thought it was a cold. I was just sneezing, and food tastes great. I think that's why I didn't think I had it. And my mom's like, oh, I never get sick. I'm not worried about it. I'm like, Mom, maybe you shouldn't share guacamole with me. She's like, I'll be fine, honey. And then I left, and she called me, and she goes, yeah, I got tested. I got COVID. It wasn't a cold. You had COVID. But I never did get tested.
Yeah, like the current deal is very much like it's very common coldish in terms of like how it's playing out. So hopefully that's true across the board and the majority of people do fine. Because the speed of which this is spreading is obnoxious. So
within you, like in your body is what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying between people. Oh yeah. Well, between people, it's spreading really fast, but I'm saying like, it just feels like the common cold right now to me.
Yeah.
Because the it's more of like little pharyngitis type symptoms. It literally feels like common cold in that respect. So as long as it doesn't cause a lot of damage like the other variants, we'll just have to see. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll know if there's a big bump in what's going on because I handle all that. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, take care of yourself. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to see you still on Spaces. I was amazed and amused, but also pleasantly surprised. Like, I guess he's doing okay. So I didn't catch the topic. It was government kind of stuff. I tend not to focus too much on that just because I just can't affect or control it. So I tend to just stick to pour into things I can affect and control, like, you know, figuring out strategies and whatnot. I think I've shared with you guys that somebody told me a long time ago, the best tax strategy is to find a way to earn another dollar. And same thing with whatever adverse government monetary action, whatever you want to call it. Is that what the theme is tonight?
Yeah, it was a question of like, was there going to be like some kind of effect on the crypto space regarding any kind of like
monetary policy decisions over the next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they can try that. I think my favorite meme last year was it's like three parts. It's like Simpsons, and it's Mo throwing was it Barney the drunk out of the bar, and Mo. Like they, somebody put on him China, and then over Barney they put Bitcoin. So like Mo's throwing him out of the bar, and then in the next frame he's like kind of like he's slapping his hands like I took care of him, and he's kind of looking around seeing where he went. And then the next scene it shows like behind him Barney's back in the bar and it says like China Bitcoin. I think the network effect has taken hold, and obviously there's all kinds of FUD and things they can do to squash it and limit it. But I mean, I talked about this before. So online poker, I remember when they shut that down and it's like, okay. And yeah, it caused a lot of FUD and it caused people to, you know, scramble and do other things. But I mean, it kept going, and that's actually crypto. Like a lot of those guys could only play on crypto sites, and now online poker's kind of alive and well, even though it's still like not even fully legal. So I think enough people are opting out, at least with a portion of their dollars of the system, to where I think crypto is here to stay. As far as what the government's doing to our I just don't even know. I'll be honest. The conspiracy theory that I heard that seems to make the most sense is that the banking system, like the whole financial industry and banking system of which I'm a part of, essentially knew they kind of screwed the pooch, for lack of a better word, in 2008. And there was egg on their face. And then after that, stimulus just continued and continued and continued and continued. And they realized that it kind of reached a point of critical mass to where they were about to get the blame again. And so whether COVID was manufactured or it wasn't manufactured, but it just happened, and they go, oh, wow, here's our chance. Let's just turn the printing presses on full blast. And then that way it's like, well, see, we're all in this together. Like, we didn't do this, right? We had to. I don't know.
It's like a convenient disaster to like print money.
Right. And to continue, you know, like, yeah, it's spreading and stuff. And like, you know, like I got double vax, and I'm pretty sure I got it. I know a ton of people that have got it, but I actually know one guy who died, and I think he was pretty healthy. I mean, I played pickleball with him, and he was full of piss and vinegar when we played pickleball. And he actually died. I don't know if he had other issues or whatever, but I mean, I know a lot of people that had it, and not a lot of people that died. And I don't know if it was worth just completely torching our economy for it. But, you know, again, these are things that I just don't have control over. And thankfully I got the message on this crypto to where, you know, well, I still obviously have a pretty good foot in TradFi and in whatever the traditional economy, but I'm starting to, you know, that one foot's over there. I'm starting to opt out with this other foot.
Well, there's like two elements to the idea of like just torching the economy versus not. And the thing is, like, the Western world's public sort of has gotten to this like level where everyone thinks they have to live forever. So the first thing is, like, if you have like just enough damage going on where like you can't walk into a hospital, and someone says, well, there's just no more services, you just have to die, then the public's going to be in complete outrage. On the other hand, like, there's plenty of people that like say, oh, well, I don't want to get vaccinated or this and that. And of course, you know, almost like 90% of the people in the hospital are like unvaccinated at this point. And the same people who don't want to do that won't simply say, well, you know what, like, okay, if I wind up on getting super sick, I won't occupy a ventilated room and whatnot. They're like, oh, just sort of treat me, like, not realizing that like none of the treatments really do very much, like, in the grand scheme of things. Like, if your genetics says you're fucked, you're basically fucked. Let me give it to you that in the best, simplest manner as possible. What ends up happening is everyone's a hypocrite at some level. It's the people that don't want to get vaccinated, they're hypocrites. The people that, don't want to print money, many of those same people will be perfectly willing to accept it if they had to, you know, like, pay their mortgage or whatever. So, yeah, we do. You go into this sort of feedback loop of, like, you can't be total monsters with people and say, well, you know, it's better to like have some people die and not shut down the economy. But at the same time, like Hutch, the other funny thing was like, if there's a sufficient and high enough, like negative media press with people showing up at hospitals dying at the front door, what would end up happening is like restaurants and shit are going to get closed down anyway, right? Like you're going to wind up with people being so afraid to go out if they had that kind of calamity happening. But what had happened instead was everyone had the calamity happening inside of hospital doors to the point where people don't even realize that this is one of the most like catastrophic respiratory illnesses of the last like 70 years. Like at no point have we had our hospitals filled to the brim, like every single bed, every single recovery area, like everything in the hallways, just full of people, like, and you had like manufactured ventilators and shit. And you had such a high mortality rate from this. So yeah, it is nowhere near anything that we've normally would face. Like it overwhelmed all like the volume of heart attack deaths. It like literally overwhelmed everything. Like, and you know, I do this for a living dealing with like death and destruction. And like, yeah, there's just no comparison. And the weird thing is like, it's sort of like how prisons work. You know how like a lot of people, they don't know how many people are in prison and like it doesn't serve as a deterrent because like your children have never visited a prison. So like they're likely to commit a crime because they don't even think prisons exist. And like, you know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't serve, people don't really believe that's a real universe. Like, yeah, you see it on TV and shit, but like similar thing to hospitals when they like, what they had to do is when they quarantined everything, what ended up happening was is like normal like community doesn't show up, right? They don't see all these people and how everything was set up. So it didn't seem real to people. That's what ended up happening. Like the public is like, well, is this even real? Like, is this actually happening? And that is part of what happened. Although if normally, like if your dozen family members would show up, if you're sick, like all of them are going to tell stories about how bad the situation looks, right? But instead, nobody was allowed to show up. And so nobody's there to tell the story. And that was a fascinating play as well. But yeah, the entire thing was very strange. And but yeah, the effect on the economy in terms of money printing and everything was obviously substantial too. It was just hard to, it was hard to like tell people, well, don't show up at work or whatever, but then also have them like, you know, lose their livelihoods and not be able to pay the rent, which is very,
yeah. I mean, hindsight's 2020, and obviously, like I remember my dad saying, you know, I would never be president, but boy, if I could be appointed dictator, I would do it. So if I was benevolent dictator, then I would just say, okay, whoever's really scared and wants to stay home, that's cool, and we'll get you a check. And whoever is not worried about it and wants to go to work, go for it. And obviously,
just imagine like being the a politician in this space, in this situation, right? Like, it doesn't matter how it goes, you're going to get blamed, right? Like, if people lose their jobs, get blamed. If people die, you get blamed. If too many people die, you get blamed. If not enough people die, you get blamed. It almost doesn't matter what you do. You didn't get the vaccine fast enough, you get blamed. It's too late, you get blamed. You have a vaccine, you're making people use it, you get blamed for that too. Like, the reality is that there's no winning because human beings are fucking retarded.
It's true. Ryan Lyon posted something about how just like just randos will come out of nowhere and just like just whatever respond with really mean shit to your tweets or whatever. And it's like, that's just, I mean, that's, I tell my kids, because my kids are, you know, they're like, one's in junior high and a couple are in high school. And I just say, you know, like, listen, people say shit. But it just imagine like you're in the jungle, like one night we did a sleepover at a wild animal park. We were able to stay there at night, and you just hear all these kind of animal sounds all night. And I go, it's just kind of like that, girls, right? It's just like people just kind of and you can't take it too seriously, because a lot of times people just say shit and they don't even know what they're saying, or they don't even mean anything, but you're making it mean all this stuff. Like, don't worry about it.
Earlier today, like I had mentioned this, and one of the guys said, hey, did you look up this guy by the name of McCullough, who's a, I think it's a Texas A&M doc, and like he like bought into this like early COVID treatment idea of ivermectin, this, that, and the other thing. And so since one of the guys earlier said, hey, you should look into this, I went and like
pulled up one of his videos to see if I'm thinking if it's the right guy. And I watched his shit and I'm like, okay, this guy's a fucking idiot, by the way. Like, and so many people followed this guy's theory. And but that's not even the point. The real point is, if you go look at the YouTube comments on this guy, there's like tons of people that like his video because he says something positive, right? So this is the problem. If you're the bearer of bad news, in other words, you're me, well, guess what? Nobody's going to like you because basically, like, you know, people want that like unusually hopeful fictional fairy tale like message. And if you don't deliver that like in spades, then all of a sudden you're like this bad guy. So I knew this was going to happen. Like, so back when like 2 years ago when all this began. So like when you model out like a serious flu situation, right? Like you model out like a 2 or 3% mortality. Just keep in mind, like we had a 0.5% mortality or less, right? Like maybe a 0.25%. And this is how much drama it created. Imagine what a 3% mortality virus would do. It would be truly biblical. I mean, you'd have bodies everywhere, people dying left and right. Almost every single family would have someone they know that has died. You'd have disruption of transportation, food services, mass deaths from like literally like every angle in society, transportation breakdown, petrochemical production, farming, the works, right? You'd have truly biblical events. So in my mind, like that's what I was worried about when this began. I'm like, oh man, like the public is not ready for this shit, right? So we actually brushed off really nicely as being a fairly mild situation. And even then there's a lot of whining and shit going on, quite frankly. Like if you do what I do, like the reality is that you just have no idea how biblical these things can get. Just Armageddon level events, like total breakdown of society globally, can be quite nasty, you know? And so in other words, even movies don't do justice to how bad this goes, because in movies, like you get a happy ending and shit, you know?
I did see it for a weekend. So I was actually in LA when the LA riots happened. And actually kind of went down to where it was. I had long hair and stuff. And I, you know, I was in college, I was taking classes, and I was actually in an African-American history class. And I was like, I got to go down and see what's going on. Like, this is history. And thankfully I didn't get killed. But I saw what it was like when Law and Order takes the weekend off, and it is fucking nuts.
It's like imagine Hurricane Katrina, but everywhere simultaneously, like breakdown of like all sorts of services, because what you'd have is basically like you'd have so many people ill, right? You wouldn't actually have people showing up to work doing like normal shit, right? And if you just have enough people perish with critical capabilities and or even someone in their family, you have a whole bunch of people like out of work and it's a mess. So, you know, we actually got lucked out in many ways, civilization, in this particular episode. But like people think this was like with you know, and this is with like hospitals full. A 1% mortality virus would basically be just epic, because you'd have zero chance. You'd just simply be left to die. That's what would happen, because there'd be simply no capability to take care of all of that, right? So then you'd have to be just like triaging mass casualty and just death, just rampant death. So this is really relatively mild, and actually it's very concerning that like society couldn't handle it at all. It was actually a fairly like poorly run situation overall. And like, if something really bad happens, we're basically fucked, is what my general tendency is. And that conviction's higher after watching what happened here. Although there are some pretty miraculous things that came about from this. The speed of like deployment of mRNA vaccines and such was pretty impressive. We certainly would have a lot more people die if it wasn't for those, but the very interesting technology and really, really effective. And then you got people like saying that, like, you know, like unvaxxed sperm is the next Bitcoin. That's hilarious. The stupidest ass nonsense, like as if mRNA affects your DNA. It's just ridiculous nonsense. The strange internet crowd has just basically lost its mind. I'm probably talking to half the people in this room, possibly too, but just the sheer like lunacy and the weird messaging that gets out there has just been strange, man. Like if we had a really serious virus, I mean, like it would just be just complete chaos. Like this was relatively mild, and the world has suffered substantially. And I'm not downplaying that. And probably people that you know, people here have had people die. I know we've known people that have died in town, but so it's not nothing to laugh at. But man, like it could be way worse, way, way worse.
You'd be wishing, like, if you had a flu that did this, you'd be wishing for a fucking vaccine. I promise you. When you have like family members dropping dead left and right. So this whole anti-vax thing is kind of hilarious, considering like you're living in one of the most privileged time periods in the history of the human race, and people are bitching about the stupidest nonsense ever. Really, that's that's my sensibility about this.
Let me ask you a serious question, because I don't know enough about the science. I haven't done it, but I got vaccinated twice. I'm pretty sure I got it. If I got it, should I get the third one, or is like the natural immunity good? Or
like, immunity is not so great, and part of the reason why in some people it's not, and you don't know whether it's going to be you or not, is because like what I've noticed in the way that the virus deals with your immune system is, in many people who it does, like if you did well the first time, you're probably fine. Number one. But if you, in some people, it sort of knocks your immune system down substantially enough to where you don't actually produce as much of a response as you think you have, even though you've already had it. And the problem is there's no way to measure that at the time. So it's not 100% clear whether you'd produce antibodies a second time or not. So it's been a weird virus in that respect.
So what about this third one? Because like I have friends that like are on both sides of the spectrum, and it's crazy to me that this is like a political issue or whatever. But like I'm an equal opportunity friend, and like I said, I'm pretty apolitical myself. I kind of wish we would all just kind of vote on issues, individual issues. But regardless, I have some friends that are like, oh yeah, you got to get the third one. It's like 80x better than the other two. And then I know people are like, it's a conspiracy. You got Bill Gates's microchip in your butt.
Take this for what it's worth. So basically, if you have experience with thousands of people in critical illness situations, you'll have like a different perspective on this, but this is what I would say. So 90% of the people that have, in the last several months that have died, and we're talking about pretty miserable lung damage, and then also had people that didn't die but have permanent severe lung damage and live with that for the remainder of their lives. 90% were essentially were not vaccinated at all. So
that I heard, and so I was happy. My wife.
And then you have these weird like people coming online and whatnot, claiming that this is like the opposite of what's actually true. These things don't work, and oh look, it increases the likelihood that you're going to get COVID and this and that, like shenanigans. Like none of this makes any biological sense, but doesn't mean that it like won't become a meme on the internet. So, but like in the real world scenario, 90% clear cut. Because like I make an attempt to like find out. We try to find out from every person, because like there is a stronger genetic predisposition. So, for example, like if I die, then it's more likely that my son would, because there's like genetic tendencies towards how virus interact with human beings. So I'll usually get everybody's families to also get vaccinated, especially if they had a family member that died. So it's even more like critical at that point for the family members to be involved. And the weird thing is like the entire family will have some anti-vax thing, even though dad just died and the kids are orphans and shit. Like it's so weird how like entrenched people's mindset are towards like, you know, how vaccines work. It's a weird like religion. Yeah, the thing's been a real.
You can't die. You can't die. In fact, I should have talked to Do Kwon. I don't know him, but we should have had a key man policy on you.
So yeah, like
before you got COVID,
there have been times where I sort of like dealt with the media and such, and you know, basically tried to provide some voice of reason in the whole thing, and but even despite whatever, you know, efforts have been made, like the number of people that have just been decimated, and like families and orphans and whatnot, is just obnoxious considering how relatively, actually, you know what the miracle was? The miracle is how effective the vaccine actually has been. Like for the flu, it's actually much harder to develop a vaccine that's this effective. It's been pretty good actually. So when people make claims like, oh my God, it's not good enough, or, oh, you know what? I still got the sniffles because of it, even though I got, like, these are just like irrelevant sorts of like, dramatizations of the whole thing. Like you don't take you don't take the flu vaccine to not get the sniffles. You take it so you don't get like acute respiratory distress syndrome and die of, like, you know, like that's how you measure the success, not whether you got sniffles or whether you passed flu to somebody or not.
So I was concerned about the long-term lung impact, not of the vaccine, but of COVID. So as an athlete, I had heard that like it can like just wreak havoc on your lungs. And, you know, I'll do some pretty long pickleball sessions. So that was one of my motivations to get it.
We've had some colleagues with permanent damage. We have a lot of people coming back with permanent damage. Some people, it's like the damage was just miserable enough to where like you're short of breath forever, but you survive, you know, so that's not that great. But the destruction with this particular virus has been like really unparalleled in modern time. So it's been interesting. Yeah. So the way people make it out, like, oh yeah, like whatever, I'll just get it and, you know, I'll probably be fine. Well, sure. Like you could walk out into the middle of your highway and fucking close your eyes and see what happens. And yeah, you might not get hit, and maybe 1% of the time you get hit, but like, imagine if you had a 0.25% mortality, like, and you assume that if you get out in your car and you had a 0.25% mortality today, would you go out and drive today with that mortality? No, you would not. Like, you just wouldn't. Like, so the reality is that like, that's a much higher mortality than people think for a lot of traditional illness. And then they like underplay that, like, it's not a big deal, but think about it. Like, you only have to have one person in your family die and it affects everybody, right? So you don't have to, like, your odds get multiplied the bigger your family is and whatnot. And so this number three,
I mean, should, like, because seriously, I was just thinking like, oh, I was planning on getting it, and then I think I got the schmutz. I haven't gotten tested to see if I did, but then I was like, oh, I don't need to get this number three. But you're saying I probably still should, even though
as an example, the Hispanic community got just fucking decimated. I mean, like, it's been like the biggest drop in Hispanic mortality, like, in the history of the United States. That's how bad it was. And the crazy thing is,
they weren't getting vaxxed, or is it something to do with their
It's a mixture of several things, but getting vaxxed is one of them. But like, it's fascinating how like that community did not pass on that message that, by the way, like, we're really getting our ass kicked here. But and yet still retrenched into this idea that somehow like it was a bad thing. So it wasn't like just a like political thing or a white people thing or something like that. This whole philosophy, it was actually pretty heavy amongst the Hispanic community, and it just decimated the area. Like, it's the biggest drop in like lifespan for Hispanics in the history of the United States, I think now. Pretty impressive. Like, it's no joke. Like, you can measure the average lifespan is going down. It's probably not good.
I just got my third Moderna, and it's the same thing as the second. It's just a booster.
Yeah, there's not. I did the third fine, and I think I got the Omicron at this point, just based on the symptoms. And like, now this virus may not be that bad in general, so that's a different question. But at the same time, like, there's still Delta floating around, and that's where we have a lot of the new hospital admissions, and people get in trouble with that. But yeah, like, if anybody's like overweight, diabetic. Have family members, genetic family, direct descendant or direct genetic relatives that have either died or got super sick, then you should definitely consider it more important than just the average person is how I would look at it.
Respiratory issues or autoimmune disorders.
Yeah. And it was actually, especially autoimmune disorders. There's definitely some like risk groups and such. So, people should be careful. But just think of it this way. Like, let's say you're a parent, right? Like, we had so many parents like of like pretty rational people that went down this rabbit hole and then basically orphaned their children. And I'm like, you know, that has a multi-generational fuck up effect of no particular reason, because you thought you would die on the hill of like anti-authoritarian, anti-vaccine behavior. And it's just weird shit. But like, you know, like, if you tell your children, like, by the way, if you afterwards your children like, hey, you know, dad died as this, and like, oh, but you know, he died on the hill of some anti-vax thing, your children are gonna think you're a fucking moron. It's as simple as that. Like, there's no way you're gonna define this for them as being, oh yeah, I was like, you know, I was against the government, or like, I've identified approximately 20 different rabbit holes on the internet people go down to become like, you know, believe that the internet somehow is a better source of medical knowledge than, like, you know, like people that actually do this on a regular basis. And some of that had to do, and it's weird, but like, some of these, like, there's some weird doctors out there that put out some stuff, and it sounds very hopeful and very exciting. Like this McCullough guy that people described, I went and pulled up his stuff, and I'm like, oh yeah, he's that guy that keeps advocating this shit that doesn't work. based on, like, he'll make claims that, oh yeah, I'm a medical doctor, I've seen a lot of patients. That does not make you a biostatistician. Like, get the fuck off the television.
Right?
Yeah. And then you get on YouTube comments, and like the YouTube comments are, oh yeah, you're speaking the word, man. Like, you're just, you know, you're spreading the word. I knew this was, like, the vaccines weren't necessary, that all we had to do is take ivermectin and this shit. So you basically created a situation where, like, people think that just because you have an MD degree, you have like a half a clue of how to deal with mass casualty disaster management and vaccine management and whatnot. Like, most doctors are simply not prepared for that shit. It's as simple as that. Especially not some random family doctors and whatnot that, you know, work in the community. Like, this is not like in their purview of expertise. It'd be like, you know, like if there's a difference between an astronaut and someone that like flies a Cessna or whatever, right? There's a big difference. People make it sound like just because you like have a presence on YouTube and get a bunch of followers and like get a few views, that all of a sudden you're like meaningful in some way. Like, this sort of social consensus mechanism that we see on YouTube and such is not really good for like exposing yourself to the best scientists in the world. Does that make sense? Like, you're not, just because like someone shows up on YouTube and gets interviewed on Joe Rogan does not make them the authority on shit. Essentially, medical community is very cautious about going online. And the reason is because it's very difficult to flesh out a proper medical argument over the course of like a TV broadcast or what have you. It's really complicated. Like, imagine explaining Luna to somebody. It takes like a 12-hour PowerPoint shit to explain all the details. It's no different for like medical, except it's much, much more complicated. And the statistics require a lot of specialized knowledge. And without which, like, the general public is completely ill-equipped, including a significant portion of the medical community, to like communicate these things very well. So it's not surprising to me that we had the kind of messaging and mortality problems that we did. I don't know. Being an effective science communicator is actually a very difficult thing. You have to literally parse every word you say very carefully, because you don't want to say anything particularly data inaccurate that can be construed incorrectly. But then again, you can also end up being so general that you don't provide, you know, because it's so hard to provide proper context, right? Like, and the media doesn't have time for that shit, right? And neither does the public. So the reality is you're going to get a shitty, watered down version of whatever you want to hear. And what ends up happening is most people, they just latch onto whatever they want to hear. And that becomes their gospel, sort of. They sort of simplify it to the part that they like most. And that's what ends up happening. That's how you wind up going down rabbit holes of bullshit.
I'll tell you the part I like the most right now is Luna's trying to make a God candle.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to pop up and doze out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught that, but Luna's back to 89.
Awesome.
No, it's, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. It'll be fine.
Yeah. But I was just going to say, thanks for the time. Thanks for joining and having
fun, everybody.
And I'm sure we'll talk later.
Yeah. Everyone stay out there and have a good night, guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That space was hosted by VGX hero Obi-Wan, joined by C-Fi, and a bunch of other lunatics talking about Terra, VGX, Luna, all that stuff. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Setting up the stage for the main event. Greatly resent how the day is kept. Haven't left the house in over 3 months. Feeling burned out like when acid reflux. Believers need Jesus and me, I need patience to get through the day while these retards break shit. Trying to book a ticket to the space station. Relay the signal back to this great nation. People asking, will it ever get back on track? Pissing in the wind, trying to decorate the habitat. Getting factories attacked, hacked back to back. Nobody looking good like a bunch of cataracts. Fat cats walking labs, still getting fatter while the chatter spreads faster. Mind over matter, pattern seeking patterns till the whole thing shatters. And we're left in this world just to man these disasters.
14 kids, fresh out of lockdown. Looking for a map, find a way to the lost trail. Fuck a job, fresh new boss smell. Hunting down anything that's looking too hostile. Filling up bowls with a bunch of copy pasta. Naughty coppers, sniffing out the hot sauce. Rowdy rompers, popping off a lot of monsters. And if you don't believe me, empty out the roster. Cancel the concerts, board up the windows. Hoarding the pintos, sorry the wind blows. Bored with no income, more incognito. Sore from the risk of storing libido. Build up the store, buy more with the free dough. Coming from a cat who's never turned down free glow. And that's the definition of the word freedom. Fuck all your rights till you need them.
Without fail, every single VSL4 lab in the U.S. gets some type of safety violation. Some type of, you know, thing that they could do better. And that's the purpose of doing those inspections. It's to make sure that biosafety is as tight and secure as it can possibly be.
We're going to focus on one theory that both U.S. intelligence and lawmakers are examining. That the virus accidentally escaped from a lab.
Terra Spaces.